This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. In the early 1900s, a newspaper out of St. Louis boasted a subscriber base of 20,000 readers. It was written in Spanish and published by an exiled Mexican journalist whose writings about wealth inequality on both sides of the U.S.-Mexico border inspired uprisings and the Mexican Revolution in 1910. His name was Ricardo Flores Magón. This Saturday at the Missouri History Museum, historian Francisco Perez will explore the life and legacy of Flores Magón. Francisco is a Washington University student and MexSTL researcher. He joins us now to talk about the journalist, St. Louis's connections to the Mexican Revolution, and how that history ties into what is happening in the present. Francisco, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Good afternoon, Elaine. It's a pleasure to share this moment with you and also to share this moment with my grandmother, Abuelita Teresa, who is tuning all the way in from Mexico here into the station.
Wow, that's fantastic. Bienvenidos to your Abuelita. So, Francisco, when did you first learn about Flores Magón?
I originally knew nothing, not even his name, let alone his time here in St. Louis. It was mainly just a real opportunity given by my other classmates who are now founders of Mexican STL, Jade Pita del Prado and Jonah Zox. They just mentioned it to me one day and they asked me if I was interested in researching this lovely history in our city's chapter. And I was like, I'm all in.
Where did I first turn?
The archives, the newspaper archives found in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, the Globe Democrat, they really, really covered this event. This had international attention, all the way from the Mexican newspaper south of the border to those north of the border, too. It was of national and international importance.
And what was it about his story that captivated you or intrigued you?
He's a man who was very outspoken. He was not scared to criticize the Mexican dictatorship at the time, under a general by the name of Porfirio Diaz. Mm-hmm. He said, and I quote, "Let paper be my greatest weapon."
That is, it's very vivid, and this paper being his weapon. What do you know about how Flores Magón ended up in St. Louis and starting the paper here?
Yes. So he originally was, after criticizing the dictator, he was exiled in Texas. But even there, he was persecuted by both the U.S. government and Mexican officials. And so St. Louis was essentially a sanctuary for him, a political sanctuary. Even that wouldn't last long, but he thought St. Louis was far enough from the reach of the dictator, but also it also had the radical politics that aligned with his views to defend democracy and the working class.
Mm-hmm. So he had readers in the United States as well as in Mexico, right?
Precisely.
Mm-hmm. What was the range of topics or stories that were published in the paper was called Regeneración, right? Mm-hmm. Yes. What was that range?
It was very, very ranged. He covered a lot of topics, but the main one of them is to criticize the corruption of the Mexican government and also to find allies here in the United States, see them as labor leaders, as the labor movement, to unite under Mexican ideals and the revolution.
Mm-hmm. Do you have some sense of how far-reaching the paper was? How far north it went, east, west?
Certainly as far north as Chicago and as far south as the southern border of Mexico,
mm-hmm.
it would be smuggled because the USPS at the time and also the Mexican Postal Service were not willing to distribute this newspaper. And so he had to smuggle them either as an individual letter envelopes or people would also risk their lives. Mexican working class people would literally hide them in the train cargos or stuff them under their vests. And in doing so, if they were discovered, they were going to get executed.
Mm-hmm. Are there any, you know, anecdotes that you have found about the way this publication affected, you know, how people were thinking about Mexico and then also how they were thinking about the way things were going in the United States?
Yes, if I may. There were big, big names, big leaders on both sides of the border who agreed with him. Emma Goldman. He met with Emma Goldman, a labor activist. Samuel Gompers, another labor activist. Jane Addams, a progressive reformer. And these people supported him. They wrote their endorsements. They even bailed him out mm-hmm. in some cases because he went to jail often.
How many times are we talking here?
More than I can count with my hands. The American government and the Mexican government would incarcerate him for just any little petty thing.
Mm-hmm. Now, the logistics then of getting the paper made in St. Louis and then to Mexico, you know, you've talked about the smuggling. The U.S. Postal Service was used at some point, right? Did the writing that was in this paper, was it all written by Flores Magón, or were there other people who were also supporting with the writing work that they were doing?
Yes, it was not just Flores Magón. He was the main editor, but he also had Juan Saravia, Antonio Villarreal, and many others, men and women of all walks of life, exiles from Mexico. They would unite under this paper and advocate for Mexican democracy.
Mm-hmm. What was happening in Mexico at the time this paper was going out, you know, such that people would be receptive to what was written in it?
Mexico had similar problems as the United States during this time. It was mainly wealth inequality. It was labor exploitation and political corruption, rampant political corruption, all the way from the federal to the local. And people were fed up.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about Ricardo Flores Magón and St. Louis's connections to the Mexican Revolution with historian and MexSTL researcher Francisco Perez. Francisco will present on this topic at 9:30 a.m. this Saturday as part of the Missouri History Museum's Saturday Speaker Series. In what you were looking for, in looking at history, how much of that history did you find after coming to St. Louis from your native Chicago?
All the history that I learned of Ricardo Flores Magón was here in St. Louis. Even in touring the St. Louis University's football field, where there was his first residence, 108 North Channing Avenue, mm-hmm. and even walking through there, because I toured there, you feel the history.
Yeah.
You feel it, you feel it, you feel it.
You mentioned that your grandmother is listening. Have you had conversations with her? And what kinds of things has she said to you?
She, as with other Mexicans too, they still remember Ricardo Flores Magón, his legacy. And some even say that the revolution continues. And they're very keen in learning about, yes, Ricardo Flores Magón, but also St. Louis City, because St. Louis history is world history, mm-hmm. period.
Why is that an argument that you need to make?
Why is that an argument that I need to make? I think that in talking to other St. Louisans, native St. Louisans, they kind of downplay on their city. And as a matter of fact, their city, yes, not only in the past, it's still today a global city.
Mm-hmm. Is that why you chose to come here, that is?
Yes. I mean, it's not difficult to fall in love with this city. Not only its past, but also its present and future. I think that I've met great, great people of all walks of life and from around the world who live here in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm. Insofar as influence goes, you know, to return specifically to the paper, what effect did Mexican Americans and Americans have on the Mexican Revolution in 1910?
It is my understanding that by coming here, Ricardo Flores Magón was radicalized by other St. Louisans and the local St. Louis labor. Here, Ricardo Flores Magón began to question all kinds of power, and he understood the importance of building a people-powered movement. And so that's the St. Louis influence on Ricardo Flores Magón.
Mm-hmm. How did he influence St. Louis? You know, what was the mark that he left on not just St. Louis, but, you know, the Midwest?
He connected the struggles of the American working class with that of the Mexican working class. Here in St. Louis was this link for an international labor movement at that time, and for workers to fight for their rights, to form unions, to speak up against exploitation.
Mm-hmm. At that time, then, St. Louis was a hotbed of such ideas?
A radical city.
Mm-hmm. On the challenging of wealth inequality, were there particular figures in the St. Louis region that he formed relationships with during his time here?
Tied specifically to St. Louis, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That will require further research. The beauty of this story is that it is beyond just a simple search of a Google search engine, and it's beyond the grasp of ChatGPT. So what we're doing here in Mexican STL and in sharing this with you, we're just uncovering a story archive by archive.
Mm-hmm. One of the names you mentioned earlier was Emma Goldman.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of relationship did he have with Goldman?
Because he was constantly surveilled, I can't say much because these meetings were secret. Everything was done in secret.
How are you able to find this information then? I mean, you're talking about the archives. Are there particular artifacts that you have found that have provided some illumination into things that maybe you weren't even looking for light on?
Yes. So in terms of the evidence, his personal letters or correspondence here between him and his brothers and him and across Mexico too, they speak of his actions. But here's the thing. These letters are written in code. And in looking at these letters, they're squiggly lines.
Mm-hmm.
So in how do I know this? I know this because there are other Mexican historians who have gone through the letters and translated a little bit of those squiggly lines.
Mm-hmm. With Flores Magón and his messaging, you know, one of the things our producer Emily Woodbury has thought about a lot lately is how people view a person in their time, and then how they're viewed at a different time. Is there much of a difference between the way folks understood or saw Flores Magón in the early 1900s and how people understand him in this moment?
Well, I think that Ricardo Flores Magón, during his time and today, could be considered a defender of democracy. Perhaps fanatic and radical. And those are not my words. Those are the words of the Furlong spies that were sent to surveil him here in St. Louis. So his politics then and now, they still resonate with people. And it's still pretty radical.
Mm-hmm. There was some mention of Flores Magón in the Post-Dispatch and the Globe Democrat, wasn't there?
Mm-hmm.
Tell
yes.
us about that.
Yes, the Post-Dispatch, the Globe Democrat, they were on their game. They every step, everything that they knew about Ricardo Flores Magón and the so-called St. Louis Junta, that was the label that they ascribed to them. They reported everything and everything. Now, of course, it was a little bit sensationalist, right? They were not necessarily appealing to Mexican readers, but to the American readers. And there was that a little bit of exoticism, but other than that, the reporting was spot on.
Mm-hmm. And there were letters to the editor, weren't there?
Exactly, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like me to?
Yeah, yes. Sure.
One editor, a local St. Louisan, his last name is Bowerman, he supported Ricardo Flores Magón. He said, I don't understand why Ricardo Flores Magón is being locked up without a fair trial and being deported without a fair trial. Because his point was essentially, whatever his opinion was, Ricardo Flores Magón, whatever he did, he deserved the right to a fair trial, right for the freedom of press. And yeah, that was pretty much a sentiment there.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think something like that is important for people to hear right now?
That's a very, very good question. And I think that historians of the future will ask that question again and again. But here's what I can tell you. The fight for democracy continues today, but also in the past. And as I previously said, Mexicans still resonate with his messaging, with his vision for an equal democratic Mexico.
In talking with people about what you will be presenting on Saturday, what is the range of responses that you get? I mean, how many folks have no idea about this history that you've described?
I mean, even I, being a history major, I did not know anything about him. People, St. Louisans, are impressed. They are interested. And I'm glad that they're starting to see, they're starting to see their history as global history and their city as a global city.
Mm-hmm. The thing I think with history that is interesting and sometimes confounding has to do with narrative. You know, there are certain story lines. There are tropes. You know, earlier you had talked about the Furlong detectives. So there was a St. Louis detective named Thomas Furlong who was hired in 1906. So this was about 4 years before the Mexican Revolution began. And he was employed to locate Ricardo Flores Magón and the people who were working with him. Now, Furlong wrote a book about his career. And in it, he said that he'd been enlisted by the governor of Chihuahua, which is a state province.
Yes, a state.
In Mexico. Is this true? Is it not true? You know, what does it reflect about who was interested in stopping or silencing Magón?
What he says is generally true. Mexican officials hired many different detectives and many different people to capture and surveil Ricardo Flores Magón. Generally speaking, you can think of St. Louis as a battlefield where the Mexican and the American working class united. These labor movements united against the Mexican and American elites who were generally against Ricardo Flores Magón. Mm-hmm. Yes.
What ultimately happened to Ricardo Flores Magón?
He was one of the first to advocate for downright revolution and overthrowing of the dictator Porfirio Díaz. He was eventually successful in doing so. But he was generally, after St. Louis, he was generally jailed many, many times. But he still wrote and published the papers, smuggled his writings so they could be published in Regeneración, the newspaper. There was one time he was captured in St. Louis. Arrested in St. Louis. And he said, do not worry, the paper will still be published and it will come out tomorrow.
His successfully escaping, you know, and I mean, ultimately he died in a prison, right?
Yes, in Kansas.
In Kansas. But if he was on the run for that long, he had to have had people who were supporting him. What is interesting to you about that? What has your research uncovered so far about what his journey from Mexico to Texas? I believe he was also up north in Canada and
yes,
then came
he
down
was.
Here. Yeah. What's important to know about that?
What's important to know is that behind Ricardo Flores Magón was a network of people, of just regular citizens, who, even in the smallest acts of, like, for example, remaining silent when questioned, you know, did you see Ricardo Flores Magón? They would say no. They would act dumb in smuggling the newspapers, in even fundraising money to bail him out time and time again, even if they didn't have the money themselves. They threw in pennies and dimes, whatever they had, so that his, or more like their revolution, could continue.
You mentioned, Francisco, that the question of relevance of this history today is a good one for future historians of the future, that is. And we also talked earlier about some of the parallels between the early 1900s and where we are now in 2026. What lessons might we glean from this history that you've talked about?
I think that many people certainly feel uncertain. My two cents, let me just tell you this, is that as with the 19th century, we as Americans and as Mexicans have become to grapple the following questions. What does it mean to be an American? What is democracy? What should it look like? Who should be included? We're grappling with these questions again, as we did in the late 19th century and the early 20th. Mm-hmm. And so my two cents is that have a little bit of hope.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Francisco Perez is an historian, a researcher for MexSTL.org, and a history and Latin American studies undergraduate at Washington University. At 9:30 a.m. this Saturday, January 31st, Francisco will present at the Missouri History Museum Saturday Speaker Series on the life and legacy of Ricardo Flores Magón. And again, thank you, Francisco, for joining us.
Thank you very much.
This episode was produced by Emily Woodbury.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.